Well, hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Fans of Power. I am Joe Amato, and I'm here with my partner in crime, Tyler T-Rex Baker. And T-Rex, we're about ready to start off episode 75. How's it going, man?
Doing just fine, ready to sink my teeth into another meaty discussion of the mythology, the various wide variety of characters, heroes and villains, monsters and beasts and vehicles on land, sea and air and outer space and everything in between here.
Yep, it's never ending, definitely. But I was going to say, before we start getting into that, I was going to mention today, you know, always perusing sometimes, you know, other websites for like video games, figures, whatever. GameStop, out of all places you wouldn't expect, they're selling some of the Masters of the Universe Classics figures, and earlier today they had Filmation He-Man for $40 and Anti-Attorney He-Man $35, and then they have a big selection of other stuff. I'm assuming that Mattel is having a lot of their stuff from the warehouse, they're clearing it out, getting it to other, you know, ways to sell stuff out. But well, Filmation He-Man is already sold out, but as of a while ago, I thought Anti-Attorney He-Man was still up. So just for the fans, if you want to try to get some deals, just go to GameStop.com. I was freaking out. People were going bananas when I posted on my page. I mean, they couldn't believe it. Filmation He-Man, $40 instead of paying that inflated eBay price. That was pretty cool.
You know what it's saying? It's saying all those eBay scalpers, it's right here, buddy.
Exactly. I'm sure plenty people probably got up a whole bunch of those things. But, hey, I mean,
those guys are the scourge of the toy collecting community. You know, I've always had this idea in my head. If they were ever to do like a Indiana Jones that was all after collectible toys and stuff like that, not like archaeological artifacts, but like the equivalent of the Nazis would be like evil scalpers who are all about just finding these great things and charging ungodly amounts of money, you know, instead of either it belongs in the museum or in my collection in my mom's basement, you know,
Well, you know, it's, I know people, like I said, have been doing this for years. I mean, some people can, you know, they make a pretty penny here and there.
Yeah, but I just saw the other day, someone was asking $99.95 for a He-Man Classics figure that obviously is going to be up again and sold for Super 7. And it's just like $100 for, you know, something that you could get on Mandy Collector for the longest time that's going to be resold again and some jerk off is asking $100.
Yeah, because
like you just want to find that kind of person, you know, smack them around a bit, you know, and say, what the hell are you thinking? You do realize no one is going to buy this. I mean, period. I mean, any toy collector is not going to, it's not the vintage figure. $100 for a current toy that's been made in the last 10 years.
Yeah, I'll admit, when they go bananas with selling at certain prices, that's too much. I mean, I can understand, yes, if you want to make a profit, make a profit. But when they're trying to sell it for 2-3 times, sometimes even 4 times the amount, that's just, like I said, they're trying to, like, drive up the value of it. You see other people trying on eBay, but it usually doesn't work, and it usually drops right back down because they don't sell it. But
I'm all for free enterprise, but it just seems so insulting to fans. And it's like what they're just hoping is that the newcomer to the group who barely knows anything about anything and just has a vague recollection of, hey, I got too bad for my 5th birthday. It was great. And we went and saw the live action movie and I saw Secret of the Sword in theaters and that's really about the extent of it. Comes back to the fold here. $100 for one of these newer ones? I can't afford that. And unfortunately, it's not, I mean, obviously this whole GameStop thing is not heavily advertised. If Joe Amato had not stumbled upon this, I'm sure the vast majority of the Facebook community of He-Man fans probably would not have found out about it. I sure as hell wouldn't, because I don't shop at GameStop or anywhere else for that matter.
But
I hate that mentality. I despise it. I'm all for it. If a guy wants to charge $50-$60, fine. Sure. But $100.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's, hey, they'll learn one way or another. When they see it doesn't sell, well, then they'll lower it.
That real quick here for people who saw this today and got excited about this or whatever, you know, just remember Super 7 is going to be putting out some of the, you know, the original figures, Skeletor, He-Man, Ram-Man, Teela, Faker, and Man-at-Arms. So if you're listening to this, which there's always a possibility here, do not spend $100 for a Classics version of He-Man. Wait till Super 7 puts these out for available or go ahead and pre-order. You can get better packaging and not have to pay a ridiculous price that, you know, it's, you know, you might as well just, you know, hand the guy the money, you know, and let him kick you in the nuts and call it a day.
Exactly. It's like you said, don't be disheartened. If they didn't get anything or they're still thinking about it, like you said, you just hold back. You know, don't pay any crazy eBay prices. I'm sure almost all of these will come back one way or another. So, but I was just happy to see so many of the Masters fans, you know, getting those today. And, you know, like, thanks, Joe. I was like, hey, no problem. I just love seeing them get it. You know, the crazy thing is, I didn't even get anything for myself just because, well, I don't have the money to be getting them. I still need Filmation, He-Man, Skeletor, but it was awesome to see that deal. And I was like, you know what? I know they'll come back. I don't worry
So
about it.
what Joe's trying to say is he's putting out, you know, a casting call for a Secret Santa. You know, we're
No, I'm
approaching
saying because
summertime here, and
no, because
as Joe's Secret Santa, he needs the Filmation line. He needs some of the last wave of the classic figures, preferably Squeeze and Ninjor, you know. And God
no.
forbid, we got to make sure this man has a Lizard Man in his possession here.
No,
So
they're
any Secret Santas that'll be, you know, on in the casting call, these are the things the boy needs.
Gonna, like I said, they'll all come back, and when money is available, I could find any of these. That's why I don't get scared. It's not like the old days of thinking, you know, like, Jesus, should I get some of these things that are for the vintage figures? There's no way I'd ever pay for those because those prices, they're so high. Because, of course, those original 80s stuff, they'll never go down. But these classics, I don't ever sweat it because I know they're going to come back, and you can always get them for a good
You know,
price.
it, what's odd too is that you can get vintage figures sometimes cheaper than the classics, which I don't understand that mentality. I mean,
I
you are
guess.
better off looking for a vintage too bad on mint on card for less than $100, $100, dineros, whatever you want to, than getting probably the classics version. I mean, if someone's asking $100 for a classics version of He-Man, you can get, if you look, and I've seen it on eBay, you can get like Leech, Hordak, Grizzlor, the Rock Warriors. Various other vintage figures for under $100. Some of them you can get for like $40, $50.
Yeah,
You know,
sometimes depending on their card, like you said, the minting
well,
is.
depending on the card and the character, but just knowing you can pick up two vintage figures for that ridiculous price, I mean, it's
Yeah.
like people like that need to be castrated.
You can make out it sometimes. But well, that was a little bit of news that I, like I said, came across today, thought I'd share with fans. But we have a couple topics. And also with the couple topics, we'll have a couple fan questions that we're going to be answering too. But to start it off, we're going to talk. You know, what's weird is a lot of things about art have been popping up, but me and T-Rex have had this plan for over a week that, you know, I think almost two, where we're going to talk about some of our favorite art for
We
Masters of
didn't
the.
have this planned for 2 weeks here. Don't be trying to put people's idea in that we've been dissecting this here. I just
Well,
had
I
to
thought it
burst
was
through
about,
all
okay, just a week or over a week. Shut
that.
up.
Maybe perhaps in Joe's head, but he just ran this by me, you know, no more than a few hours ago here, people. So.
So anyways, there's a lot of great ones for Masters of the Universe, New Adventures, you know, Princess of Power. Here's the thing. You know, again, Masters of the Universe, something that was so special about the box art, at least for the toys for Masters back then, compared to a lot of other lines, is just it was that painted, beautiful box art, and it was almost like it was capturing a story within just that one little picture that was on each box. And I'm not knocking any other toy lines out there, but they just didn't have that same feel and appeal to pull you in. You know, some of them, sure, they of course they had the characters on it, a drawn thing, whatever, but Masters had this painted thing. It just, I don't know, it felt so, I don't know, engrossing. Like I said, it was a story within just a picture. But I was gonna say, just ask for a couple of, like, okay, just to begin with, Castle Grayskull is absolutely one of my favorite vintage, you know, box arts for anything. I mean, there's plenty for the vehicles we'll get into too, but it was scary looking. That castle was so frightening looking. And what's weird is I never really paid attention about how Skeletor is, you know, in the, you know, the drawbridge standing there and the warriors on the outside. I never thought about that. You know, of course, people brought up later, like, why is Skeletor inside there? And then you hear that Rudy Obrero thought, or was told, you know, when he had all the characters, he thought it was just Skeletor's castle. He didn't know. So that's why he drew him in his castle. Looked like it belonged to him. That's one of my favorites is Castle Grayskull, just from, like I said, what was going to happen with the whole battle, everybody's setting off, ready to get in. But the castle itself, I just love the evil essence of that. Even though the toy didn't capture exactly how it looked on the box, but who cares? You don't think that. You see the box art, you play with your toy, you're just envisioning this frightening looking, you know, looking place that holds all the secrets. But that's just one I want to start with. You go to some of yours too, but God, there's so many. The art that was done by just multiple, Rudy Obrero, William George. I mean, oh Jesus, go ahead, Tyler.
The first one that comes to mind for me, and this is based strictly out of childhood, was the slime pit.
Ah,
And
yes.
you know, and I based it on the fact that you know, when I saw it, I never knew anything of the Slime Pit. This is probably late 87 or early 88, probably before my brother was born, or maybe even around the time he was born. I just don't remember him really being around at the time when I, you know, especially during my big surge of becoming a He-Man fan. But it was at the Family Dollar store, and it was on the top rack. And as a kid, when you're a little guy, I mean, I was probably 3 or 4 years old, the top rack of a toy store was about as halfway to heaven because it was so far up.
Yeah, right.
See that, and that was just burned in my brain, because prior to that, I didn't have any of the Castle Grayskull Snake Mountain that I got were hand-me-downs, so I didn't get them in the boxes. I had no idea what the box looked like. It was strictly the card art, and the mini comics was about as far as it went, other than maybe coloring books and storybooks and stuff like that. So the box art was few and far between as a kid, and the Slime Pit was the first one that I ever recall seeing, and still to this day remains one of my absolute favorites, because of just seeing Beastman on the box was a big deal to me, and the Slime Pit itself, to me, it looked humongous. Slime, Hordak dumping slime on Beastman, it was just a vision that just, you know, I remember being with my granny and just, oh my gosh, like, you know, as a kid, you know, they tell you, you know, you can't have that, but you're like, dear God, I've got to try for this. I have to try to get the Slime Pit here.
And that was at Family Dollar? You said a Family Dollar, huh?
This was at Family Dollar. It was where I currently live right now. It was right down the street on the corner next to the bridge down here. And, you know, like I said, at the time, I didn't know that. And it was, you know, this is the late 80s at the time. So obviously this was stuff that was, you know, probably just being liquidated, so to speak, at the time. But and it could have been dirt cheap at the time for all I know. But
man.
Just one of those things that, you know, no, you can't have that, but it was just, it was amazing. And that was one of the first pieces of box art that I remember looking for, you know, when the internet came along, you know, because I don't recall seeing a lot of pictures of it in magazines and stuff like that too at the time. So just burned in my head still to this day. I mean, I have one mint box I got for $30 on eBay.
Wow, that is freaking.
You be patient, dig around. You don't have to pay out the ass for something you really want. So.
Yeah, you can find a treasure. That's funny. It's just, you know, you saying that Family Dollar story, the reason I guess it really is fascinating to me is Family Dollars in my area, they didn't come around till, God, I don't know, I was probably almost 20. So it's weird hearing your story. There was no Family Dollar in my area when I was growing up during the time of Masters. So it's just kind of weird. You know, just thought of seeing that at that type of store. It's,
yeah, I mean, I there was a few other 80s toys that I'd seen in Family Dollar that I managed to get, but that was the only time I saw something He-Man related. And then after that, I wouldn't see anything He-Man related from the vintage line until probably like 1990-91, and Toys R Us had a Dragon Walker on clearance for like $15.
Oh.
And that was seeing the box art of the Dragon Walker, and of course it was around Christmas time. No, child, you can't have that. You know? Oh, no, wait, I take that back. No. Okay. I completely told a lie. It was seeing the Jitsu Night Stalker 2-pack at K&K Toys. And that was on the top shelf, too.
Oh, my God. Could you imagine having those gems now still, all those crazy 2-packs that they
made? I know. I would not realize till early days of the internet that particular 2-pack was one of the most, you know, coveted items. Even doing an eBay search, it's very, very rare to actually find the box with both of them in it, with the packaging, the artwork, and everything. And that was I can't believe I forgot that one. I hold that box art in such high regard because of the impact that it had on me, because I desperately wanted Jitsu and Night Stalker at the time. I take that back. Slight, huh?
Would you say, is William George one of the main ones that did the box art for?
The ones I'm talking about too, I believe are William George, you know, the Dragon Walker, the 2-pack, and I think he did the Fisto Stridor 2-pack, you know, the Slime Pit. You know, I think Rudy did a lot of the earlier stuff, like the attack track and the battle ram, you know.
Did he do the Wind Raider too, I think?
I think he did the Wind Raider as well. Probably Battle Cat.
I'm glad you said that with Battle Cat. The one where it shows Battle Cat with his mask off to the side and like kind of pawing at you, you know, with the mask off. God, did that always look so barbaric. You know, because you know how He-Man always gets a comparison in its early days of having a feeling of, you know, like kind of Conan, you know, that type of, you know, warrior. That one felt very, very gritty, if you know what I'm talking about. You know the one I'm saying, right?
Oh, I know. Yeah, I remember when I first saw it, I'm like, why is Battle Cat not wearing his helmet? That was my first thought, because I just did not. I had the toy as a kid, you know, as a, I think I got it from a friend at school. We didn't want it anymore. But I just was, to picture Battle Cat without the helmet was kind of sacrilege to me. Like, why in the world is he illustrated without the helmet, and the helmet sitting off to the side? And, you know, but, you know, I, you know, it didn't take long for me to figure out once I saw the box art. I'm like, okay, you learned that this, the beginnings of this line were so out there, you know, that nobody knew what to be, you know, who was the bad guys, who were the good guys, what were their purposes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That's why that box art is, don't get me wrong, it's a stunning piece of artwork. And understanding why the helmet was kind of set off to the side, because obviously it was probably meant to depict it however you want. You want the fierce fighting tiger without the helmet, or with the helmet, you have that option. So,
and you know, that's another thing. Weren't there four Battle Cat, and I couldn't remember if it was because some of the two packs, didn't they do like a couple different versions, like beyond that one? Wasn't there the one where He-Man is riding Battle Cat, but then there's multiple Battle Cats in the background?
That's on the Battle Cat box art too. Like Beastman's riding one.
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
And there's a few other people writing as if like Battle Cat. You could picture like when Rudy is doing this art where he's probably thinking there's, you know, kind of like horses, you know, when you think, yeah, you know, Conan, you know, Clash of Titans, Beastmaster, people are riding various horses and stuff like that. Well, why can't Battle Cat be a fierce group of particular tigers that if you can tame and harness and everything, then you can ride them around into battle and everything too. Kind of like, you know, almost thought of as like, you know, because Panther hadn't come along yet, you could probably envision a whole fleet of Battle Cats.
Yeah,
ridden by various people.
Yeah, because like
that
you said,
been
they're
like
steeds.
The equivalent of a horse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you. And that's what I was thinking too, is their version of, like you said, horses or something, were these Battle Cats. And that's why you've seen some with the mask off, some with it on. Because, you know, I can't think of many. I'm sure there's others. I'm not saying there's not, because I don't want people chewing my head off, but there's not many illustrations of beautiful painted or anything where Battle Cat has his mask off. That's what makes it usually, I guess, really most iconic, is because it stands out, since you don't see that. Because obviously in filmation cartoon, you've never seen Battle Cat with his mask off.
No.
So
no, you know, I can't imagine the Golden Books, you know, none of the ones that I'm aware of, you know, it was, if Battle Cat was there, it was either Cringer or Battle Cat with the helmet on. You did not see anything like that. And
we do have a shout out from the chat room. Max Works on the YouTube chat says Battle Cat wasn't wearing his helmet on the King of Castle Grayskull mini comic cover.
Yep, which came out the same year as Battle Cat too, so that makes sense as well.
Yes, thank you for that too.
Thank you for reminding us about that one.
Exactly. I guess I was so engrossed with all the box art and stuff. You know, sometimes, I mean, like you said, I'm sure there's probably other times he's been drawn without it. You know, what's funny is not seeing him with it off in the cartoon. I always felt like if it was off, this is going to sound weird, but it's like, I felt like he would turn back into Cringer. Like this was like, you know, an item that had him as Battle Cat. And if it was off, then he would transform. It's weird. It brought a memory again is when I was a kid. I used to think that it was like magical. And if it was off, he would turn back into Cringer. As stupid as that sounds, but it's, I guess that's how it is, since we never seen him, you know, like how He-Man said, let the power return finally to turn into Adam. We never got to see Cringer transform. I mean, Battle Cat transform back to Cringer. So that's a weird little memory. I'm glad he brought that up, because now it just went into my head.
Boy, you stupid Joe Mono.
I was a dumb kid. I'm pretty close to being as dumb as I was too. I'm still damn close. But no, I felt like, you know, talking about this, it's just so cool because there's so many and there's things we still, I'd love to see great scans and great things, maybe hopefully in a future book.
Well, I mean, there's just the box arts alone too. I mean, you know, to go back to like the Fisto one, where you've got Fisto and Stridor riding in a battle, and they're heading to stop Skeletor and Whiplash in the distance, and you've got small planets in the sky. You know, that was a cool thing about a lot of the backgrounds in He-Man, was that they tend to draw like a lot of various planets that you could see from the ground, as if like, you know, you can see other planets up in the sky, not just like the moon or the sun and stuff like that too. And just a lot of extra details and setting up battle scenes that Fisto is working on his own with Strider to go and stop the Lord of Destruction and the evil tail thrashing warrior. Or another one that I touched on a while back was the Point Dread box art. Mm-hmm. Really a story where He-Man and Teal have got to get the hell out of here, get the Talon Fighter, and get out of there before Skeletor and the evil warriors get there. And Man-at-Arms is there to fight them off and give them time to get away. You got Castle Grayskull in the background. Joe's talking about how these things paint stories. That's a story in itself. You've got, you know, a battle against time to get out of there before Skeletor. And that leaves Man-at-Arms to fight these three guys off all by himself and could very well meet his defeat, a fatal end, or kick all three of their asses. We have no idea, but...
See, you're right. They all do tell a story. And what drove me nuts as a kid, not only with the box art, but the same thing with coloring books and other things, is I hated that when there was an image of something, whether it was the logo, UPC, whether it was like showing the place at whatever it was somewhere on that box, it drove me nuts because I wanted to see all the art, you know, every piece of it.
Oh, yeah. Thank God, you know, that people have made full scans of that, because where you have like the window kind of cuts off a lot of the artwork, and you see full scans of what these things look like. You're like, oh, I mean, even though it's not a whole lot missing, but to get the full impact of what that initial painting was supposed to be. So thank God, you know, for the internet and people who have managed to find those scans of the full picture. Because a lot of them were, you cut out some details and some of them not so much. Like the Dragon Walker, as great as it is, leaves a left a lot to be desired, because I'm so, you know, used to seeing various characters on the box. So I'm like, the Nightstalker box has got Skeletor, Nightstalker against Battle Armor He-Man and Mechaneck, you know, and Snake Mountain is depicted as like this rocky trail, winding trail up to Snake Mountain, you know, and just...
And you know where most of those could be found, which I liked, where you could find a lot of that art was... It was on the box, but it was usually on the side where they had a smaller picture. So, yeah, that's what I did with some of the ones I had. I, like, scanned that, and since it's super high resolution, then I just sat there and made it bigger. You got to see it, but, like, Eternia. Like I told you, beyond when I first got that thing and, you know, set it up and played for months and months nonstop straight, I told you, when I got that box for the playset, I didn't even open it for the longest, because I'm sitting there staring at that box art. It's just that gigantic epic thing with, you know, the vehicles flying. You see some of the Snake Men. But, you know, I always read too much into everything. I was like, well, why is Blaster Hawk on the side with, you know, Viper Tower? Why is Fright Fighter over there with Grayskull Tower? The good and the bad should be, you know, of course, I don't realize, oh, it's because one's attacking that side or the other. I always thought they were trying to put, like, bad vehicles around the wrong spots, but that's a heck, it's so intense, you feel it, and I think the reason you feel such power and emotion from that piece is just the central tower itself, that face that, of course, you know, the lion has in every depiction, just that open mouth screaming at you. It's so memorable. It's, I don't know, that's one of my favorites. I think Eternia, the playset for Eternia, is my favorite, just because the intensity of that piece, but especially seeing Central Tower. I love that line.
That's something that, you know, if we had a Hall of Fame, I mean, you know, Snake Mountain, Castle Grayskull, Eternia, I would probably put Eternia. I don't know, that Castle Grayskull one's really badass, though. I mean,
yeah, it is.
It, and then, of course, you know, the Fright Zone is another one that I not steer off from Eternia, because the Eternia one is so bright and vibrant.
Yeah.
And to see so many characters, you know, that have been released at the time, you know, all running to, like, you got Rattler and Tongue Lasher running to the battle, Flying Fist, He-Man, and Terrorclaw, Skeletor fighting, you know, near Central Tower and various things. And, you know, it's just setting it up for, this is for everybody. All the figures that you bought up to this point, they are all supposed to come together and just kick each other's ass.
Yeah.
For all of this massive playset.
Exactly, because, you know, as amazing as the other ones are for the playsets, you know, they all had a darkness, a grittiness to it, which, you know, set the mood and tone for it. But this one, like you said, that's a good thing you brought up about being bright. I mean, it's the first time you've really seen a brightness, but still it felt so, you know, fantastic and amazing because everything's so clear. It's so vivid. You know, the others felt dark and moody and a different tone, but
you know, the Eternity most of these too, like, I don't, you know, if I'm wrong on this, somebody call me out and correct me on this, but I think for the most part, most of the box arts are all taking place at night.
You know, I've never thought of
that. Or it's either a very murky setting. I mean, you look at everything from Monstroid to the Slime Pit to Grayskull, Snake Mountain, the Fright Zone. Mantisaur has some color on it. So
with a little blue and blue in the background.
Yeah, but Nightstalker, Stridor, I mean, Battlecat, Panther, Screech, Zoar, the Attack Track, the Battle Ram, the Wind Raider, it's very smoky looking or at night. And it adds a lot of grit and maturity to something that is for children. You think, this is what, you know, cool kids play with. You know, this is what adult kids play with here, you know, because this does not look like anything light and fluffy.
No.
Not something that's... It's a step above the rest, and I mean I give G.I. Joe a lot of credit because their card art and box arts too were something to be, you know, taken seriously as well. But the He-Man stuff really just, I mean, it was like looking, especially those early ones that Rudy Obrero did, was like looking at Frank Frazetta paintings. I mean, you go back and look at Frank Frazetta paintings. I mean, everybody from the women to the horses to the various creatures and warriors. I mean, everybody is just the epitome of ass kicking. And unfortunately, we got that in the majority of all. And there isn't a bad piece of He-Man box art.
No, I was going to say.
I can't think of even the later ones that came with the Giants, with Megator and Titus being my favorite box art of the two Giants, because it's got Hero, Squeeze, Snake Face, and King Hiss, along with Titus on there. Depicting, you know, this club grabbing a hold of Squeeze and Heroes, you know, standing next to him, you know, yeah, get them, kick their ass.
You know, you're going to hate what I'm going to say. If I was to pick a least favorite, and it's not that I'm knocking any of these, because like I said, I love them all. It's another, yes, story, and I know you're going to hate hearing it, but my least favorite is probably Snake Mountain. And I know you're going to hate hearing it, but I'll just tell you why. It's because, shut up. As much as I love that playset and, you know, using the microphone to, you know, do the crazy voice, I've always said that the face of Snake Mountain, even as a kid, I always felt like it was a Muppet-like. It never seemed intimidating to me or threatening. So when I seen even the box art, I was like, you can't even, shut up. You can't even make this box art look intimidating. I hate it, Snake Mountain. So there you go. I know people out there going to, you're gonna hate me, and I apologize, but if I had to give a least favorite, that's it, and that's why. So there you go, Tyler. Go ahead.
You call yourself a fan?
Yeah, I'm not a real fan. I've never been a real fan.
I feel like Joe Pesci in Casino when the guy's, you know, BSing about the money that he blew. Is like, you call yourself a man? You know, you are a lying, cheating, no good mutter butter.
Well, there, I had to say it's my least favorite, but I'm going to bring
I can't say. I mean, I probably, if I had to pick one, maybe Megator, because he's just kicking a rock, and that's, even though the artwork looks beautiful, there's not a whole lot going on other than showcasing his kicking action. So, you know, that's only because I like to see variety in my artwork. You know, like even with the Tower Tools, you've got He-Man, Clamp Champ, Prince Adam, Cyclone, and Skeletor, all and Ninja, all in the same box art. The Scuba Attack. You got Clamp Champ, Faker, and Skeletor with this beautiful underwater, you know, scene with a little eel crawling out. I mean, it's they're, you know, I like seeing that what you're buying is the focus. Like Monstroid is the focus, but you've got Roboto, Cyclone, Thunder Punch, He-Man, and Man at Arms all depicted in this beautiful painting of them trying to take out this machine that the Horde has unleashed. And
yeah, you know what? Some of the coolest little things.
You know, but maybe Mantisaur, because Mantisaur is not really doing a whole lot. Hordak's kind of sitting on him, kind of near like this desert frontier kind of thing. But it looks good because it's very vibrant.
Yeah,
and exactly. I you know, so yeah, I guess maybe Megators would probably just be the least action oriented. Because I can't say that they're bad because the artwork is all beautiful.
Oh, they're all, like you said.
I'm not going to pull a Joe Amato here and say, Well, you know, because Megator's got rooted hair and he's like a girl.
Well, thanks. Now, I do like that William George always put like a hidden little creature somewhere on each of his like paintings.
Yeah, you got little creatures running around on the rocks and stuff like that. Yeah. And it's always nice to see, you know, you just how rich just these simple paintings are. And all He-Man fans, if you that's a common bond with He-Man fans, is everybody relates to the idea of how awesome the box art was.
Sure.
You know, and that's one of the biggest points about Master of the Universe is the artwork that came along with it, because fortunately, you know, Sword and Sorcerer was so popular in the early 80s, all these guys who grew up on Conan and stuff like that to have opportunities to do paintings and drawings and illustrations of stuff that they obviously seemed to be very much in tune with, was just like an opportunity for these guys to go nuts. It's like, this is for kids, but it's not too far-fetched from Conan. You've got all kinds of crazy muscle-headed monsters and villains and heroes and damsels in distress and creatures and castles and stuff like that. That's just why the 80s was the greatest decade that the world has ever known.
And that is no doubt. And I'm going to, before we do another little thing here, I'm going to mention the most kind of controversial, strange talked about box art. And it's not from Masters of the Universe. It's from He-Man, you know, New Adventures, but it's from He-Man. And I'm going to try to show this. I wish I would have had a picture set for Doug to show, but it's for Sagittar. Now, you know that Sagittar is a beast that can be ridden like a centaur. Now, it's just the reaction in the face that He-Man is giving Sagittar, as it just looks strange. He's giving the look like, I don't know, but here's, it ain't just Sagittar. This is why this box art gets even stranger. Because then you have Butthead, I believe, and he's writing back a Skeletor. But I was like, okay, now you're not writing Skeletor like an animal, like He-Man's writing Sagittar. And this is way too close. This is the, I've seen so many people talk about this box art. You know you have too. And it's just so strange. So his Skeletor's like, hey, what's going on? Oh my god, I'm sorry, Tyler. Don't, oh, never mind. I'll have to share this later. It's the box art for Sagittar is,
yeah, be sure that you do there and make sure you include all your little cute remarks. It looks like He-Man's, you know, humping Sagittar from behind here.
Oh, look at this, look at Sagittar. That poor man is looking shocked, like, hey, even lady. No, but. So this one's one of the weirdest.
And clearly, Butthead is frightened and is trying to get the hell out of the way. Which look, that's why he's right on top of Skeletor. He ain't riding Skeletor from the rear end here.
It's
people like you that keep these goofy juvenile jokes, which ain't funny to begin with.
It is,
here, alive and well, because Joe's got to say it looks like he's getting humped by Butthead.
Somebody mentioned that. Shut up, when they posted that, I looked, I was like, man, you got a point. This one looks like the artist was taking a lot of, you know.
I had this discussion with Joe earlier in the week, and I held back the intensity, but I was like, what the hell are you doing here?
I answer this one, just cracks me up every time I see it. And, hey, you know what's weird?
Yeah, which means, like, if Joe's doing this, you can guarantee he was checking out books in the library in middle school and drawing pictures of peepees and wee-wees, you know, and stuff like that, too.
Shut up. So, that's that. I had to bring that up. So now that we're done talking about,
I'm so glad that you did.
Now, aren't you? I'm going to bring up now.
Now you got people selling New Adventures where they're like, oh man, Sagittar likes to get humped.
Shut up. No, it's just, it's a strange looking one. You got to admit it. But
no, it ain't strange at all. Sagittar is meant to be either be running around or ridden as a helpful steed in the battle here. And you ruined it.
I just ruined it. Well, Skeletor and, like I said, Butthead, they topped it off. They shouldn't have been on the box in that look.
They're not pumping each other.
No, they're not. I know that. Just it's awkward.
No, but you're trying to imply something. What are you trying to imply there, Amato?
Oh, it's like I'm implying
when you're looking at Skeleton Boy, what are you suggesting there?
I don't know. They asking.
You Butthead brought it up. You're trying to imply that there's something going on.
What he's asking Butthead if he's asking Butthead if he's got a banana in his pocket or if he's happy to see him. That's, he's shocked.
Nice, but you better thank God I'm not. I'd slap that mask right off your face right now.
All right. Well, so that's it. Now, speaking of art, one of our fans out there, and I hope I get your name right, his name is Jaime Marez. He asked, he said, if they were to do another art of Masters of the Universe, you know, book, you know, like Dark Horse did, you know, he said, would you, you know, I don't know, what do you think they could put in? He said he'd love to see all the Errol McCarthy, you know, art from the back of the cards. And you know what? There is so much that can be shown. I mean, there's that. There's still all of, I think they should give full one-page shots for every Earl, Norm, William George, Rudy Obrero. I mean, Fred Carrillo for the ones he did. Also, I mean, the ones for like all the puzzle art too, which is R.L. Allen. Now, he did the puzzle art. He did a lot of the coloring book ones, but not just quick little shots. I mean, full page. They all deserve full page because the Art of He-Man book was absolutely fantastic, but it still didn't show everything that we could have got. There's still so much that can make an entire another volume beyond all the stuff from the magazines, the posters, the backs, like, you know, of the cards. I mean, there's so much merchandise stuff. There are so many things that are out there, like how I shared those Nestle Quick photos, the ones from the can itself and the poster that I think that was Jim Steranko did that. Where do you usually see? I mean, you don't ever see his art anywhere. I mean, I think there's so much that could be done. Like, for example, you're not going to be able to see this whole thing, but I'm going to try to share one other thing with you. It's a, I love when they do this stuff. This is for the Castle Grayskull Playhouse. And it's like, what they did was they drew the kids playing. But I mean, you know, the kids are a piece of art. That picture of the tents art. I mean, the stuff with He-Man. It's like, so many things are out there that I think you can make an entire another book. But I mean, there was only a little bit, Tyler, because I know, I think you said you didn't have the Art of He-Man book, but they only gave a limited amount of the Errol McCarthy pieces to where there was just a couple here and there. But, I mean, wouldn't you love to see almost everything imaginable put into another volume? I know it could be done. There's definitely enough to make another.
I mean, this is, I feel like there's so much out there, and it's just kind of, you kind of feel like, you know, you need to devote the book to being unique in a sense that it has to be about artwork that is not seen abundantly. I mean, and I Joe's better at naming these particular artists. You get the two guys who did the He-Man puzzle, the Golden Book puzzle, the guy who did the paintings and the guy who did the colored illustrations.
Right, and I think that I think Fred Carrillo and then R.L. Allen were the ones that did most of
which you named them, but I forget what I think R.L. Allen is the one who did the colored ones, and then
they felt like painted pieces. Yeah, the one.
Yeah, with, yeah, and then yeah. Fred did the ones which like the Sword in the Mountain, Surprise Attack. Those had to be given full pages of stuff, and not just a small box in the corner here or something.
Yeah, like no that. Boxes.
No. You know, it was like the McCarthy pieces, half a page to one. Like you could put two full splashes, you know, cut the page in half, put one up here, one at the bottom here. But the stuff, like all the various coloring books have got unique artwork. You know, you've got all the various storybooks, like the Snake Man cassette book that has like Tongue Lasher and Rattler capturing He-Man underneath Snake Mountain. That's an interesting artwork, just the cover alone. You know, this can't just be about, you know, the bread and butter and the kind of generic basics. Like, no, the point of this book would be because there is so many great pieces of artwork out there that, you know, probably are known by a lot of fans, but probably there's a lot that just aren't as well known. I don't see too many people, you know, I have seen people talk about those puzzles. But to me, those puzzles were some of the best looking pieces of He-Man artwork because they were all action-packed stories. I mean, every one of those puzzles told a story. It was not just He-Man standing here with some random pose. Oh, look, there's Skeletor right there. Oh, look, there's Teela. No, these were battles.
Sure.
You know? And I all that and
well, heck, remember just the
there's even smaller pieces of artwork that Earl Norm did for the magazines.
That's like, what I like.
You know, like the one where He-Man and the Skeletor travel to Africa on Earth. And you got that small, like when it's like greeting the readers, you got He-Man standing next to someone who looks like Shaka Zulu, like this African tribe leader. I mean, that looks awesome. I would love to see an unaltered version. No letters, no words or anything, just that painting of He-Man with that with African tribal leader.
Yeah, because there was even one where another one of those greetings pages where he was in, you know, back in, you know, the time of Hero with With the dinosaur.
You got the Brontosaurus, and he's like hiding in the lee, and him with Gwildor pointing his sword out, and
For the movie. Yeah.
I mean, those are, you know, there's so many beautiful pieces of He-Man artwork out there. And you point out, like, the one for the tent, or even, like, the artwork that was used on the sleeping bag, or the various lunch boxes that were put out, you know, or, I mean, there's just so much stuff I feel like, you know, you could really...
It's limitless. There really is.
It's limitless. I mean, you could do a few volumes. I mean, honestly, one devoted to, you know, Golden Books in general, with all the stories that they did, the interior artwork, the puzzles, the coloring books. You could do a whole art book just based on Golden Books alone.
Sure. And, you know, I don't know if out there somewhere the actual unaltered images for those, you know, coloring books, the ones that were painted by R.L. Allen also. I don't know if those original pieces exist anywhere. But the thing is, I've done this for over a week ago, and I've done it with a lot of them. I've taken the front, and I scanned the back also. And with that, I make one complete piece with nothing on it. Because, like, on the front, they have the Masters of the Universe logo. On the back, it has the UPC symbol, and it might list characters and copyright this on the bottom. So when I take them both, I was showing people sometimes for the first time ever, unaltered, especially that one where Faker's coming out of Castle Grayskull. It was just, I love that piece, but I did that and I created an unaltered one. And for anyone out there, just like I did on my page, I said, if you want, just send me a message. I'll send you a high-res file of that and any of them, just so they can have a high-res piece because they're beautiful. They all deserve their own time to have, you know, I mean, to be in a book, like I said, and be a whole page. Each one of those coloring book covers and puzzles need to be its own solid page. So I'm sure it can happen, but... I mean, Jaime, thanks for that question, because it's a great question, because you bet. I think I'd love to see all the Errol McCarthy art, along with everybody else, and everything you could think of in another volume.
Absolutely. To have it all together, I mean, that's the whole point of these books, is that way you're not, you know, pulling stuff out randomly. You can just grab one big book and just flip through, look at all the McCarthy, you know, prototype drawings, the unused pajama t-shirt designs and stuff like that he did, you know, like Fisto punching Jitsu and Cobra Khan fighting, you know, versus He-Man and Webster versus He-Man and He-Man versus Squeeze with the scuba attack. And
they're fascinating.
Stuff that I would love to see, you know, in a book so I could look at it from, you know, top to bottom here, observe it at my own leisure and not constantly having to be searching the internet, you know?
Exactly, because I got a lot of that art. I wish I could remember the guy. There was a guy that had the original piece of this one where I think it was, I want to say Fright Fighter. But Fright Fighter was in this gigantic battle doing something, and he was selling on eBay. But I showed him, I said, did you know that was put out into a sticker? Like some of these other stickers from other countries, it was random. They had a lot of that art that was used to, like, you know, promote Masters and into whatever, you know, degree. But they made these cool stickers. And like one I showed you, Tyler, remember that one with Monstroid spinning around some of the good antics?
Yep.
God, to have full, you know, full covered, I mean, full pages for each of them would be amazing. So let's just hope for the best. But I was going to say, before we get to one other question from a fan, we're going to do our next topic, which I'll let you lead off with a good mini comic discussion. And what mini comic are we going to hit today, T-Rex?
Today we decided to go to a Larry Houston classic, which was Temple of Darkness.
Yes.
Which was, it's a pretty simplistic story, but it's also one of the few mini comics that has a Filmation episode done. And that's a question I would not know who to ask. Probably someone from Filmation, but even they may not even know either. But, you know, when we had Larry on, you know, we told him that a lot of the comics that he worked on were also episodes of the cartoon from Double-Edged Sword, Slave City, Temple of Darkness here is obviously Temple of the Sun. And I want to say, I thought there was a couple of others, maybe at least one more. Double-Edged Sword. I'm just drawing a blank here all of a sudden here. Well, point being is that some of these mini comics also were Filmation episodes that were either compacted or expanded upon. Whereas Double-Edged Sword, the story of Double-Edged Sword and Filmation is expanded upon a lot more, where it's barely touched upon because, you know, that I almost kind of feel like they had an idea for the story, but they really didn't get to focus on making sure that this young kid who wants to be a member of the Royal Guard, that violence is not something to be, you know, taken lightly, that it is where people do get hurt. Whereas in the Filmation episode, you know, the grandpa, Chad's grandpa is obviously paralyzed from, you know, violence and war. Mm-hmm. Temple of Darkness here, instead of Netfu, we have, well, Skeletor capturing the sorceress, and, you know, the Heroic Wars have to pretty much come and stop him from, you know, taking full control of the sorceress here. And
you know, I got a question for you, and it's about that cover. You know, I always thought, you know, when I was a kid, because, I mean, I love seeing how Skeletor is blasting at He-Man using the shield. I mean, Skeletor just looks so wicked in it. But here's the thing about that. As a kid, I always thought he had, a sphere in his hand. I didn't realize it was just energy blasting out of his hand. But as a kid, I always thought he had some, like, you know, magical ball or sphere. So that was just a little, you know, tidbit. But here's what I have a question for. I know it's a couple of them. Not saying all. Not saying he did. But there was something about Larry Houston's covers I always liked. His, before it had like the, you know, everybody always calls it Temple of Darkness. But he always had something where, you know, He-Man versus Skeletor in the Temple of Darkness. Like he did for It's He-Man versus Geldor for the Secret Liquid of Life. Do you think Larry named him like that? Or do you think he was just, it's just a coincidence that a couple of the books he worked on both had that similar introduction to start? I don't know. Wouldn't it be weird? I guess, you know,
that's something I'd love to ask him about. And I've tried to get in touch with him. So hopefully we will hear back from him again. We can get him to come back and answer that, because I, you know, we have so many questions we didn't get to ask him the last time he was on here. And that's one of them. I mean, he certainly doesn't do that with all of them, but Larry is a big comic book fan, obviously a big X-Men fan. And, you know, he, I mean, it's only with the two covers here, but it's, you kind of wonder, you know, that is it, you know, was that his idea? You know, did he?
Yeah, because that's a similar vibe and a coincidence.
Yeah, and that's something we definitely need to ask him. And another thing that, you know, it's on pretty much most of the mini comics, but I always associate it with the ones that he did, was with all his covers, you'd always see a small version of Castle Grayskull in the background. Like it just, like I said, it's in most of the mini comics, but when I look at his covers, and this to me, this was always something that I just noticed as a kid, that to see this epic battle in the foreground, and you look in the background, every one of these battles, even Double-Edged Sword, the giant Mannian plant attacking the young boy here, Castle Grayskull's in the background.
Yeah.
And it was just, to me, that's what was my impression, that all these great battles in He-Man always take place in front of Castle Grayskull. No matter what it is, you know, He-Man versus Geldor in front of Castle Grayskull. This was epic as hell, you know. But, I mean, you go back and look at any of these mini-comics. I mean, even Clash of Arms. Nothing to do with Castle Grayskull in the story. But Fisto's getting attacked in front of Castle Grayskull.
Well, that's the genius thing about almost all the covers for pretty much, you could say, almost a lot of stories. But, yeah, Castle Grayskull had nothing to do with that. Castle Grayskull had nothing to do with this. That had nothing to do with Secret Liquid of Life. And also, the covers of each of those mini-comics, usually what you've seen on a mini-comic, nothing like that ever happened in the mini-comic. Like I always say, with Geldor getting this great battle, he has an axe, he's ready to attack He-Man. Never happened in the comic. This cover of the Temple of Darkness, you see Skeletor holding the sorceress, fading and collapsing. Never happened in the mini-comic. He just got her as a Falcon. But go ahead, why don't you give the premise of the story, and we'll, like, pick little parts apart.
Yeah, it's Skeletor has created this pyramid fortress, so to speak, much like how Netfu has a pyramid fortress in Temple of the Sun.
Well, doesn't this appear every 300 years, this Temple of Darkness?
I'm just trying to double-check here.
Because I think it appears every 300 years, which always, that's what confused me, was thinking, okay, how did he already have a dungeon and everything? Like, they made it sound like Skeletor.
Are you talking about Netfu, or are you talking about Skeletor? Because I don't pick up anything about that.
No, I mean in this mini-comic, in the Temple of Darkness. I thought that this Temple of Darkness appears every 300 years, and that's when Skeletor had the Scarab, you know, to use its power, trying to, you know, get He-Man, because he captured, you know, the Falcon to try to learn her powers or its powers.
Oh, where you may have seen that here, because...
Yeah, you'll see it disappear at the end of the mini-comic.
Well, I know it disappears at the end of the mini, but I'm trying to find where you saw this pyramid only appears.
Oh, I think it's when He-Man is he's running. It's when he gets message from the sorceress to come to the Temple of Darkness. And as he's arriving on the Road Ripper, and here comes Teela and Man-at-Arms and Ram-Man in their vehicles, too. I think there was a couple of tack tracks. They see it, and they're like, I didn't, like a sandstorm. First, Skeletor creates like a sandstorm with the magic scarab, and then he manages his sword to reverse it. And then when he sees the temple, he's like, the temple, I thought it was only a legend. I was like, but the sorceress just told you about it. How'd you know where it was at? But then
there is nothing here saying that this temple just rises every 2,000 years.
Wait, but no, it does. Because then He-Man says something, I think, on one of the panels, that same panel where he was like, but it only appears every 300 years. Look at this, look at the page where they all arrive there. I think that's where it's at. Is either the page where all the heroes...
Okay, it is said to appear every 300 years.
Okay. Yeah, so eventually it disappears, but yes, so
Skeletor... Wait, so that's not He-Man saying that, though.
I think it's Ram-Man. He's a moron, remember? He isn't...
No, I think it's Mr. Exposition here, Man-at-Arms. And okay. You know what? He says that about everything, so I debunk whatever he says.
He's wrong. It didn't happen. So eventually it fades away, but it's... Yeah, so he captures... the Falcon, and it's his way of trying to get He-Man there and probably defeat him. But with it, he's using this scarab to create like the time demons, other things for He-Man to fight. I always loved those time demons. It was such a cool idea of these giant things that...
Very, very bizarre, but I know we had asked Larry about that, and that's just kind of what he came up with. It was just these giant killer clocks.
Yeah, and I think that they used, like,
quite cool.
Yeah, and one of, like, the second hands or the hands from the clock he uses as a weapon, I think. I think he's holding it. But they're just genius, these gigantic things. But, you know, they're told that if they were to touch you and you get in their clutches or something, you'd be lost in time forever. But, like you said, the whole story is you don't see a transformation. You see it's just He-Man, which is, it seems like that's almost a norm for a lot of,
lot of these books, that, you know, the transformation, even though this is heavily Filmation inspired, you look at Skeletor, this is a spitting image of Filmation, and He-Man to a certain extent, same thing. Man-at-Arms looks very Filmation. Teela looks very Filmation too, just her color scheme is different. She's pink.
The same thing with like Sorceress being white. She has her different look.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, she looks just like Filmation, but her color scheme is white and fair skin. So it's not she's sporting a brown tan in the cartoon, but she's definitely a lot more lighter complected than this. But Oh, and another thing to make Castle Grayskull is that when they get the message from the Sorceress, they're all at Castle Grayskull. They're all leaving on the Road Ripper and attack tracks from Castle Grayskull. It's just like, that's the hangout for the heroic warriors. And it's like, not the Royal Palace, we're hanging out at Castle Grayskull. This is where our garage is at and everything. So when we're called to battle, we leave Grayskull.
Exactly, because we're, like I said, we're not saying the entire story as you notice everyone out there. We're just doing bits and pieces, so for those who forgot about it can read it themselves. But yes, I like how it even starts off, like you said, when they're at Castle Grayskull, when they're ready to take off. I like how Larry made the Road Ripper with He-Man pop a wheelie like a motorcycle.
Oh, yeah, I thought it was a really cool effect, too.
Everything he did in it. So you're right. I mean, they had to go there and they have to save the Falcon, as they kept referring to as the Falcon. Save, you know, the Falcon, defeat Skeletor, and at the end, I think they all are headed back to Castle Grayskull anyways. I think that's how it ends, is them going back there and ready for more adventures. And you also see the Sorceress appear, like, out of a flower or something. That's when you finally see her, her
and
full form.
She looks just like the opening credits for Filmation, when it says, you know, our friends, the Sorceress, and there she is with the wings spread. I mean, it looks just like Filmation. That's, which, you know, Larry is done his original designs and concepts for a lot of these characters, but also, you know, I don't think we asked him, but, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, did he choose to follow this look to kind of coincide with the cartoons, or did he just kind of feel like, you know what, I like that, I'm just going to do it because I like it because of how it looks, or was it like, you know, something that Filmation was working with Mattel? You know, because it's not like this in all the mini comics. I mean, a lot of these mini comics, you know, the looks and stuff like that. I mean, obviously, Evil Inn is never depicted looking like, you know, the Filmation counterpart. She looks, for the most part, like the toy. She may have a cape here and there on occasion. But, you know, like in Skeletor's Dragon, nobody looks like Filmation. Nobody does. So it just kind of makes you wonder at the same time when Larry's doing these books, is he choosing to depict these characters to look more like the cartoon? Because obviously this is what's on TV at the time. This is what's so popular.
Or even if he was asked to do that, you never know.
Yeah, was he asked to do it? Or he's like, you know what? I like how these look. I'm going to incorporate that. But then again, he's got Ram Man, you know, not pint size, not short and stocky. Right. He looks Filmation Ram Man, but he's taller, slender.
And that's like, you know, a black darkness.
Bit of a goof.
Yeah, for his eyes, it's like blackened with white eyes popping. It is. It's pretty cool. So, I mean, I like I said, that mini comic from beginning to end, it was just pretty much just action-packed right to the point. You know, not a lot of story to, you know, slow down or get you bored.
It's just action. It was like, we got to save Zora. She's trapped. And just going up against a lot of these Egyptian, you know, inspired obstacles, you know, breaking in this pyramid, fighting giant scarabs, a sandstorm, you know, you got the time demons, of course, which are not really Egyptian inspired here, but if you read this and you've seen Temple of the Sun, you can clearly see, you know, Nepthu capturing Zora the Falcon, not really realizing what he's got, whereas Skeletor realizes Zora the Falcon is something important, but doesn't realize it's the sorceress.
Yeah, that's because that's the part I always wondered. I was like, well, does he know that Zora is a sorceress? I mean, everybody else does, but does he? Because he said that would help him get some powers by getting the Falcon. So I don't know. I mean, it's interesting, but either way, it was, like you said, it was just a great from beginning to end. Nothing slow, no nagging parts of anybody like saying something that would get on your nerves. I know, Tyler, sometimes there's certain people that when they say something, you're like, oh God, she acted like this. I guess, you know, I'm already saying Teela.
Well, yeah, but... I mean, Teela's never depicted as a whining brat in any of these mini comics. She's always depicted as competent, level-headed, works with the team. She's not thinking of herself. She's not trying to prove anything. She's like, let's go. Let's go take care of business. We all go together. She's part of the team too. It's like she's never told, you got to stay here and peel potatoes. You got to stay here and, you know, and do this, and do that. Make sure that the you've changed all the light bulbs. Make sure all the fire the fire alarm works like that. Huh?
They said the smoke detectors or something.
Yeah, smoke detectors and stuff like that. Make sure all the batteries are changed and everything like that.
Right.
She's part of the boys, and that's the way she should be depicted. Is like, no, she's no different. And, you know, age-wise and stuff like that, she is part of the gang. And
that's true. And
she's always treated like that. So I want to emphasize that for people who are assuming that I always, you know, despise Teela or something like that too, because she's very likable in all the mini comics. There's not one where she's like, oh, God, you know, it just doesn't happen.
She's likable.
And I know Joe had mentioned this. Maybe it's something that me and Joe had talked about in private or one time, but the way Larry depicts Ram Man, it's like he has got one hell of a jump, because he jumped from a distance here at an angle here and it appears to be flying. But, you know, obviously Ram Man can't fly, but it's like you buy the image that he just jumped really hard and is running along with the group here.
Sure it is. But, well, that was that. That was
no, no matter what the fact here at the bottom here says, it's depicted as though he can fly. He can't fly, so don't think that.
Well, you just hold on, because I'm sure you'll hear something from Karsten, you know, later on about Ram Man flying or not. But, well, besides that, no, I was
a piece of my mind.
Yeah, you just keep that in mind from Karsten. But I'm going to, before we, you know, wrap her up and stuff, we have another fan question, and it's from Paul Rudman. Now, he said, do you think a cartoon, like let's say, like how in MYP, when it was of the time of Captain Randor, Keldor, you know, let's say even Queen Marlena landing on, you know, Eternia. Let's mix, you know, both canons together. But either way, before He-Man and at the time of Captain Randor and Keldor and all that, do you think that's something that would interest people? Do you think it would have been a success? Could be a success if they did a cartoon like that? Do you think that's something that could hold people's attention? So that's a question from Paul. So thank you, Paul, for the question. And Tyler, what do you think? Do you think fans would be into something like that?
I think only MYP fans would be interested in that kind of thing, because frankly, I don't want to know anything about Skeletor's past. I don't want to know any more about Queen Marlena's past other than the fact she landed. Her and King Randor bumped uglies, had two kids. One was stolen, one was safe. You know, that she's a very good mother, blah, blah, blah. The only backstory that I want to hear more about is pre-Eternia with Hero and Eldor, their feuds with King Hiss, possibly the Horde as well. the world of the dinosaurs and the other heroes and villains that inhabit that world. The creation of Castle Grayskull itself, because no, it's not responsible or it's not anything associated with King Grayskull and any of that other abomination here. That's the only backstory that, and frankly, at this point, let me say this as well, Paul, that if for some reason that they, whoever's in charge of making new media have decided to do that, they would not put it in the hands of somebody that really knows He-Man inside and out. They were going to give some schmuck who just wants an opportunity to work on an animated series because he's desperate to work on a new Superman cartoon or Batman or whatever, that this is not his forte, and he'll just say something like, "Oh, I remember He-Man. I used to watch the 2000X cartoon back in the day." They do not put this property in the hands of people who genuinely love this property. The people who do love it are barely given a decent opportunity to work on, if they're given that at all, and then they're dismissed because they have great ideas. Well, we don't have good ideas, and we're not going to use yours because it's not a good idea, and we didn't come up with it. So I just feel like even if someone decided, you know what, I can make this work, this person would really have to have a full knowledge, and not just NYP. I will not settle for someone whose only history with He-Man is just watching the NYP series. No, you are not fully credited to work on Master of the Universe if the only thing you know of is NYP, the 2000X line, the Stactions, and the current He-Man toy line. You need to be somebody who's well-versed, not just with Filmation. I'm talking about all sorts of canons of this mythology and these characters of heroes and villains here.
It'd be great to have it all. Like you said, the knowledge of all
Obviously, something like this is going to be more NYP inspired, and I don't want that. There was a lot of mistakes in NYP. Yes, they did some things right, but they got a lot of stuff wrong as well. And, if we start explaining so much of this stuff, it takes away the mistakes. Well, I've never been so, even though the visual design of Kelder looks cool, I'm not too fond of the whole idea of Kelder being He-Man's uncle. There's nothing fun or great about that. And the idea of, like, he's just, if you're going to do Kelder, this guy has got to be evil from the beginning, not someone who was picked on or he's disregarded because he's got blue skin and we want to introduce racism in the Master of the Universe myth. It's like, no, we don't need that either.
This is how I kind of look at it. I would like to, honestly, I'd like to see a series like that. Do I think that it, like, if it came out, would it last? Well, you know how fans are. Fans, like, usually want it to get to the point. They probably like, well, where's He-Man? Can we get to He-Man already? But here, in a Joe Amato perfect world, it would be cool if, like, let's say, along with MYP, maybe they could have had another cartoon that would show the stuff before it all happened. Because to think of, let's see what everything Captain Randor went through. And maybe a time, it came across where we'd see where Cronus finally, not from that comic, but where Cronus, lost his jaw, got a different arm, and it just maybe the evolution of the characters up until then. I would be all for watching something like that. It would be fun. Maybe even seeing, like, when Queen Marlena first crashed on Eternia, and then things, how it progressed from there. Maybe you could see even how the sorceress then knows that, the person who's going to bring the ones that are going to be, the mother of the champions of destiny, He-Man and She-Ra. It would just be interesting to see maybe a little evolution of a cartoon, possibly, or just their...
Well, but they touched on some of the stuff in the Filmation series, like the Rainbow Warrior and Teela's Quest, where you see how Marlena crashed and was
found. Sure.
Rainbow Warrior. I think the sword touches on it too, but I'm not interested in King Randor's life. I'm like, he's strictly just there to bust Adam's balls and to add depth and texture to Adam's character, someone who wants to prove who clearly is everything that his father wants him to be, but he can't show that he is. And that, I feel like that's all I want to see from King Randor. I didn't like how he was portrayed a whole lot in NYP. He's flipping around doing all this stuff. And I just felt like,
Well, here's the thing. I still, like I said, I think it, depending on which canon, it could still be interesting. NYP, from the things that we're mentioning with Keldor or Captain Randor, I could still be interested. And as for Filmation, like how you said, we've seen the flashback of how Marlena landed. We also seen young Prince Adam and when he first got Cringer. We seen Teela when she was being trained with the bow and arrow by, Man-at-Arms. But I admit, when I seen those flashes as a kid, I was kind of intrigued. Like, oh, it'd be cool. Like, you know, what if we could see more of them? I thought we'd see more of a young Prince Adam, a young Teela. So, you know, just hypotheticals. And if they had stuff like that, I mean, I'd eat it up. I'd like to see it. But
yeah,
I mean,
and to a certain degree, some of the stuff would be interesting to see. But no one wants to, you know, everyone wants to reinvent the situation here. It's just like, I feel like you've been given what needs to be done. Teela is raised by Man at Arms, so she is going to be more warrior like. She's going to be, you know, you want to. I kind of feel like there's not going to be a whole lot of mystery there. But if you're going to tell the story of Teela and Adam growing up, Adam's growing up in the royal courts, you know, I probably develops the personality of being lazy. He's like, all this stuff is boring to me. I'd rather chase pretty women, hang out with Cringer and sleep, goof around with Orko, while Teela's training in the courtyard with Man-at-Arms, trying, you know, desperately wanting to be captain of the guard, be the first female to lead the royal guard, who knows, or whatever. You can have conflicting stories like that. But if you go and decide to add, like, this underlying love story between the two of them, and it's rich and in debt, and she starts dating this guy, and Adam's jealous, and then you're like, then you take a bullet, put it in his head right there, because it's unnecessary backstory. You're trying to reinvent the wheel, and damn it, you don't need to do that.
Right.
You know, I feel like you got the simple story here. Just flesh it out a little bit here. Would you not try and, I don't know. I have so little faith. There are people who know this property out there, but they're never given an opportunity to be given the pen or pencil, computer, whatever it is, to write these stories out. It's always given to somebody who's like, oh, I can do this. It's just, you know, it's. I just feel like.
Oh, I see where you're coming from. Like you said, it's like you. It really just surprised me.
I want more He-Man stuff as much as anybody, and probably even more in some cases there. But I have no faith in somebody who's not, you know, I just kind of feel like it would be hard pressed to find somebody who's not known to He-Man fans. You know, you kind of feel like if, you know, just because, you know, like you hear about professional wrestlers right now, like certain ones who like He-Man, I'm like, does that make them a hardcore fan? No. Does that mean they should play him in a movie? No. But because they say it, oh, we're gonna cast, you know, Sheamus to play the role of Beastman. He likes He-Man. He had Beastman as a kid. Perfect casting. No. And I just feel like, you know, there, you know, I don't know of any. I mean, of course, I'm not in Hollywood. None of us are. But I just kind of feel like you need somebody who can really just, if you throw him Goatman, the guy's gonna know who Goatman is.
Oh, you know, yeah. Like I always say,
a lot of detail, not just the bare minimum, not just He-Man and Teela, the first wave of figures. Okay, hire this man to write a brand new series, giving backstories to certain elements of MYP and Filmation here. I just feel like, no. Not that people can't go and do their research, but I feel like the fans have been burned so many times from lack of good writing
when it comes to a perfect scenario would be having somebody that really did have a knowledge of everything, writing the stories, maybe.
But when you do, that's like, I remember, I forgot what the one guy was. This is going back probably maybe 6-7 years ago, some guy, I think he'd worked on a DC project or something like that, and said he had a pitch for He-Man, a new He-Man series. And you clearly tell, listen to this guy's pitch, all he knew was 2000X and She-Ra, and that was it. And it didn't sound like he knew a whole lot about She-Ra either. But it was just like, thank God this guy did not get an opportunity. Because it's just, I don't know. I feel like writing for these characters should not be as hard as people are making it out.
It shouldn't. Like I said, with all the rich history of everything, from the mini comics to Golden Books to the cartoons, everything, there's plenty to choose upon. You should never pick just one particular thing to write from, because you have multiple things, and then learn it all. And you wish, like I said, in a perfect world, that a fan who knows all the stuff, like, you know, there's a lot of them, that they'd be working on it. But
it's just like when they hired McG, which that, thank God that all fell through. Like I was hoping it would, and thought that it would anyway. To hire him because what he thinks Snake Mountain looks cool.
Oh, I knew that would fall apart.
Lutz, who was in Expendables and one of the Twilight films, to play He-Man. Oh, I like He-Man. It's a pretty cool character, and you know the whole duality thing, Prince Adam and He-Man is pretty cool. Well, by God, man, this guy's going to be given an Oscar before the end of the year here for playing for his portrayal of He-Man.
And we knew it wouldn't happen. Like I said, believe me.
Yes, as we all knew it was going to fall apart, and now it's back in the hands of somebody else.
And trust me, it's not that I don't want a movie, and Tyler doesn't want a movie. We want movies, but like I told you, every time I hear the rumor, I'm like, yeah, we got a new movie coming. Uh-huh.
Well, it just goes to show you, too, that nobody seems to understand this property. Not the writers, not the studios who have the rights. Why the hell has it been passed around from studio to studio for so many years? Nobody gets it, and it's not hard.
No, it's really
not. You know, it's not hard at all. And, you know, you just kind of feel like, even though I'm glad nothing's been made, because look, G.I. Joe's getting ready to be rebooted. They want to make it more mainstream, and I think they even said millennial too, which I'm like, oh dear God.
Yeah, but I just feel like, you know, only imagine what
I just feel like it's, you're gonna have to have somebody who has an affinity for, you know, 80s sword and sorcery movies, loves Conan the Barbarian, that kind of mentality there. Looks at these characters, looks at the cover of Slave City here. Sees Lodar and his creatures, He-Man chained with these massive manacles attached to the ground here. And says, my God, this is epic. Look at this. Warlord's getting ready to bash He-Man's head in with the mace. And he's tied to the ground. Battle Cat is just looking at this image here. This would look great in a movie. I mean, it just feel like the people just don't get it. They don't get it, and it pisses me off.
No, I mean, I could tell. I mean, obviously, with the new comics.
Well, I feel like NYP made so many goofy things. I mean, you know, but it always, like, depicting Mechaneck as, like, this loser. Oh, my powers suck because my neck stretches. Boy, I'm worthless here.
You know, it's funny you say that about the whole NYP and people taking. Well, that's what happened, unfortunately, with all the new comics that we got. Everybody was going and taking parts from NYP and then writing from that and then butchering, like you said, characters like Mechaneck. And we'll just basically just butchering the story altogether. So, I mean, we'll never probably have a true fan that'll write a movie. And the thing is, I mean, I still ain't over and get a movie. We've been waiting for 14 years at least or something. So I have no faith. But real quick, at least to get back to Paul real quick, because this went right into a whole different discussion. Paul, would it hold people's attention and will it happen? Probably not. Would I myself like to see it? Sure. I mean, I just like trying to see something that'd be kind of interesting, at least if they write it as a good story. But no, I doubt fans would probably want to sit and watch it because they probably...
Something like this, I think would be done better as comic books. Because a cartoon series, people are going to be wondering, where's He-Man at? If you're going to do a series, like, I mean, I would love to see, you know, I mean, obviously, in Perfect World, like various episodes about the Snake Men running the show on Eternia and feuding with the Horde over control, along with, you know, fighting back, you know, the current roster of warriors that are fighting for the force of good. But to see a series of the Snake Men running the show, you know, making slaves, eating people, you know, taking the dinosaurs and running, or not even the dinosaurs or something like that. I mean, like that scene in the Powers of Grayskull Minicon, where they had like a giant snake and a couple of various times running through this village and destroying and plundering. Just seeing it from the bad guy's perspective. I mean, this is not something where the heroes went, no. We want to see how the Snake Men are such a big threat. What makes them a threat? And you focus on that. You do not have them losing at the end of each issue here, because we got to have them. It's like, this is all about depicting why these guys were such a big threat when they were running the show. I mean, that's something, I would like to see here. And see, you could hire Axel to create various new heroic warriors of that time, which Axel has always been big about, characters like Gladiator and Red Shadow and Bandwidth and stuff like that. You could throw those guys in the mix here, but make the Snake Men the focus of this and include some of the new ones like Fangor and Quick Flick and things like that.
Yeah, it probably would
work. It could be done, Paul, but I just feel like there maybe comic books would probably be the better way of, because it's a small, it's a niche story we're trying to tell here. We're not telling a story that's going to be attracted to, you know, mainstream audience who has a recollection of He-Man as a toy line and as a cartoon. We're telling stories of characters they probably aren't even aware of, or like King Randor, who's that? He-Man's dad? You know, it initially does not grab the casual 80s toy fan by the neck and pull them into it there. This is something that, you know, hardcore He-Man fans who, you know these characters quite well would be interested in. So,
yeah. Well, comic could work. Yeah, definitely comic could work. But thank you, Paul, for that.
Thank you, Paul.
Led to a discussion. Now, I was going to say, before we wrap it up and before you do your thing too, Tyler, I just want to let everybody know that John Atkin over at HemanWorld.com, he has it now to where you can log in easier if you go over there and you create your account, whatever. You can log in through Facebook. So it's a nice little new link, new way of getting into the website, linking back and forth. So you can check it out. But like I said, I always tell everybody to go to HemanWorld.com anywhere. I mean, anyways, I'm sorry. But like I said, he has a new way of doing the login system through Facebook. So that's pretty cool, and it makes it a lot quicker, a lot easier. So I want to tell everybody that, and thanks, John, for that. So Tyler, you go ahead and you give your epic moments, whatever recommendations you got before we wrap it up.
My epic moment here, before I move to a quick little bit of an update on the mini comic, is in Rise of the Snake Man Part 1 is Rattler and Cobra Khan unleashing the Snake Man and giving us a more true first appearance of all the Snake Men in animated form. And to me, is seeing Squeeze being shown in animated form for the very first time was a tremendous big deal, because I used to wonder, like, are they really going to show Squeeze? Because he was one of the last figures made, and just kept thinking it was just going to be Tongue Lasher, Rattler, King Hiss, and Cobra Khan, and that was it. But to get Snake Face and Squeeze...
I lost it for Snake Face.
Yeah, and what's pissed me off, and I'm not even going to address that second god-awful part of Rise of the Snake Man.
Yeah,
because
Snake Face, to me, was always my favorite, and to me, was the most unstoppable because just of the power he had. And go ahead. Yeah, I hated that. Well, yeah, I ain't going to mention it either.
It sucks so bad.
But, we'll discuss it in a future episode.
It was so epic to see... You know, all the Snake Men that we have come to know, other than Blast Attack, all being depicted all together as one group, all in the same episode, and built up to be this new big threat for the season, which was, we all know, just died out like a small rat.
You know,
just, you know, insignificant, they mean nothing kind of thing. But at the time, it was very epic, and King Hiss is the last one to rise out of the void, and you're like, oh boy.
And they can catch it on YouTube, right?
What's
that? They can catch it on YouTube, correct?
Yeah. If you want to see if you haven't seen this, you don't know what I'm talking about, you know, all these episodes are available on YouTube. Just look up He-Man, Rise of the Snake Man, Part 1, and you'll be able to see that episode where, you know, Cobra Khan and Rattlore unlock the void and let the remainder members of the Snake Man out. Very, very, very epic moment. And
what else you've got before we...
And wrapping it up here too, Carson sent me another update, and this is a little bit more of a, I guess you could say, a meteor panel, and this is just a small panel from one of the pages. This is not a splash page, so when you see this and look at it, just remember it's going to be like the first panel of one of the pages. Like, it's, you got three panels on the top. This is the first panel on the top here. So just to let you know.
Is that me unmasked? Did he put me there unmasked and getting caught in that rock? Is that possibly Joe Amato with his mask off?
Look at Joe Amato and his ego here.
That's me. That's me, everyone. I'm famous. I'm in a comic book. I got my foot stuck in that damn rock.
Yeah, you know what? You know where that foot is stuck? In a rock next to a particularly well-known giant hole in the Fright Zone there. So,
I hope he kills that guy, I tell you.
So one can only assume, and for people wondering who that character is, and, you know, Joe's already mad that I sent another image to be displayed here, but this is not a spoiler. This is not
I was like, damn it, what are you doing? I hate spoilers.
Seeing here has nothing to do with the story. All this panel is doing in the story is introducing what Hordak is doing at the moment when you see him.
Okay.
That is it.
All right.
This person that's in the story is obsolete to the story. He's just, I told Carson, I look at this guy as a peasant farmer who couldn't pay his taxes.
Oh, wait, I see this trick. It's an obsolete character. It doesn't matter. That's me. Somebody found
this
the
is
picture.
My, this is, yeah, this is little Joe Amato here. He said his goofy remarks about the Snake Men box art and various other things, like saying Quest for He-Man is a bad episode. Well, this is his punishment here. Hordak has seen fit. You know what? There's only one way that we can punish such a blasphemous, you know, person here.
That's fine, man. I see. So, all right. Well, go ahead. So that's but the update.
This was a great panel that Carson had drew and inked and actually colored a few hours before recording here. So he got this together beforehand. So this is another teaser from the mini comic here that he's steadily working on, and I will continue to keep giving updates each week, providing he's got something for me to share here. So,
all right. Well, thank you.
That's it for me this week.
All right. Thanks for that. Thanks for this, Karsten, and not too spoiling there. So that's good. But all right. Well, for me, like I said, we're wrapping it up. So like I always say, go to fansofpower.com, go to popculturenetwork.com, go to HeManWorld.com, and on Facebook, go to Masters of the Universe He-Man and She-Ra Ultimate Fan Group. All great places, all great people. So until next time, have a powerful day.
Can I have a piece of toast? America, we're from London.
Oh, man, you're going to hate me. I think I've seen that movie one time in my life. I don't remember.